And we are dealing with the dispute between Rav and Shmuel. The dispute is whether a majority is enough to take money out of the hands of a muchzak, out of the hands of someone who hasn't. According to Rav, yes, majority is enough. According to Shmuel, ein holchin b'mamon achar arov. In money, to take money out of somebody's hands, you need a real proof. You need witnesses. You need a document. A majority is not enough to take money out of somebody's hands. That's the view of Shmuel, and that's the view that we've been discussing a great deal. So now the Gemara is trying to prove who's right. So Tashma, come to hear a proof. We learned this quickly yesterday, but I was listening to a shiur, and I heard that I didn't explain it fully, so let's go back to it. Tashma, we learned the following. Come in here. Hamoch ever lechavero. Reuven sells a slave to Shimon, a non-Jewish slave. Then imtza ganav, and Shimon finds out that this slave is a thief. Oh, kubiustus, I translated the way the Rashbam translated. That kubiustus was a kidnapper. Tosfos says it's not a kidnapper, it's a gambler. Correct, thank you. He plays with the kubiot, he plays with the cubes, the dice. So, higiyu, then you're stuck with this person. Shimon is stuck with this thief. What can you do? However, list of mezuyin, if he's an armed robber who's got the death penalty, I'm against him because he killed people. O muhtav lemalchus, or for whatever other reason the government said he's going to be killed. So then it's not something that he got. And Omer lo, so Shimon can tell Reuven, I bought a slave. I didn't buy something dead. I bought a slave that I could use. This is not something I could use. All right, give me back my money. So now, the Gemara says, Reisha, the first case, if the slave turns out to be a thief, my time a why? Lav mishum deruba hachi isnu. Isn't it because most of the slaves are thieves? So you see that you do follow a majority. So Gemara says, no, it's not that most of them are thieves. It's kulu achisnu. It's like virtually all. It's ruba de ruba. It's like 98% are thieves. So 98% are thieves, even if you normally don't follow a regular majority, a ruba de ruba you would follow. So as I was listening to the shiur yesterday, Rabbi Elephant pointed out, this is such a strange Gemara. The whole Gemara till now has been discussing, can a majority work to take money out of somebody's hands? Here, we're trying to use the majority to leave money in somebody's hands, right? The Reuven sold the slave to Shimon. Shimon paid for the slave. So now Shimon says, I don't want him because he's a thief. Reuven says, yeah, but most of them are thieves. So that's, and therefore, leave the money in my hand. So he's using the majority to leave money in his hand. How is that in any way relevant to the discussion of whether a majority is strong enough to take money out of someone's hands? So he said in the name of the Chassam Sofer that the case of the Gemara is that Reuven sold the slave to Shimon. Shimon, though, hasn't given any money to Reuven yet. So Reuven handed over the slave. Shimon hasn't handed over the money. So now, basically, the money is in the hands of Shimon. And when we're saying, oh, but since most of the slaves are thieves, so you need to pay the money, even though what you have now you don't like. So that means that the majority is taking money out of somebody's hands. And the Gemara says, no, it's not a majority, it's a supermajority. It's the reality that most slaves are thieves is not just most slaves are thieves, it's like virtually all. It's ruba de ruba. So ruba de ruba is taking money out of somebody's hands, but not that a plain rove is taking money out of someone's hands.
So on ruba de ruba, it's okay to take someone's money from his hand?
If you have a ruba de ruba supporting your case, that could take money out of someone's hands. That's what the Gemara suggests there now. Even according to those views, that rove alone can't take money out of someone's hands. Right.
Wait, so supermajority, Reuven would retain the money?
He would be given the money. Shimon would have to...
Money. return the money.
Shimon would have to give. No, it's saying the case is that the money hasn't yet been paid, but Shimon would have to pay the money, and Reuven would be able to keep it. Ruba to Ruba, I don't know, a lot.
What is that money for? For the price of
for the slave, yeah.
So you have to pay to get a ganiv by a slave? Is that
yeah, because almost all the slaves are ganavim. So that's what it means. When you buy a slave, you're bringing a ganiv into your house.
In today's world, all the housekeepers, most of them are ganavim.
Aye. Hopefully not. All right, Tashma, coming here, another proof. Whether a majority is strong enough to take money out of someone's hands. We learned this again in Bava Kamma. We know that there are two types of oxen. There's an ox that's a tam, it's an innocent ox, it hasn't gored a lot. And an ox that's a muad, that's already gored three times and is a presumed gorer. So Tashma, come and hear the following lesson in the Mishnah in the beginning of the fifth chapter of Bava Kamma. Shor shenaga chesapara. An ox is running, and it's a violent ox, and we see a cow running away from it, and then right behind the bend, we hear the cow screaming, oi, oi, oi! The ox is making the sounds of goring. Okay, so we know that the ox gored the cow. But then when we actually get there, v'nimtza ubra betzida, we find that the cow is pregnant. And there's a dead fetus next to the cow. So they ain't no yodea. Now we're talking about an ox that's a tom that normally only pays half damage. So we don't know. Did the cow give birth before she was gored? And therefore, the calf just died on its own. So the owner of the ox is not responsible for that. Oh, or maybe the bull gored the cow, and because it gored the cow, that's why there was a miscarriage. So it's responsible to pay for the fetus too. So therefore, Meshalem, so we do the following. Chatzi nazik lapara. We take the value of the cow. We say the ox has to pay half the value of the cow because we know that the ox gored the cow. But in regards to the fetus, we don't know. Maybe the fetus was born and then it just died on its own. Maybe the ox gored the mother and that's what killed the fetus. So therefore, it's mamon amutal besafek. It's money that we don't know. And according to Sumchis, mamon amutal besafek, money that we don't know, cholkin, we divide. So therefore, what would it be if we would know? If we would know that the ox killed the fetus, the ox would have to pay half the value of the fetus. So since we don't know if that's happened, so half of that is what has to be paid. And you have to pay a quarter, okay?
So for fetus, you pay quarter?
Correct. So for the fetus, he pays a quarter. Reveal of lot. Correct, the quarter. Because it's half of a half. Half of a half is a quarter. So now it's a suffix because we don't know. So now asks the Gemara, Vamai, but if you're going to say we follow majority, so then why do we tell the owner of the ox to pay a quarter? Lema, let's say, Alechacha Rov Paros. Let's follow the majority. The Rov Paros, most cows, Mesabros Violdos, they become pregnant and they give birth to a living animal. So therefore, Sivaha, if so, this is from the majority. So then if it's from the majority, then probably what happened was Vadai Machmas Negichai Pila. I say most cases you don't have an animal giving birth and then the child dropping dead. It's not normal. Right? Normally the animals give birth to living fetuses. So what probably happened here? Why is there a dead fetus here? Well, the most likely scenario is that the ox gored the mother and that's what killed the fetus. So if that's the most likely scenario, let's make the owner of the ox pay half damage. So the Gemara answers, no, it's not really, maybe a rove could make the owner pay more money. But Hassam over there, the reason why it was a safek with the case of the ox is like this, Mishum de Mesafkalon. He said like this, even if we follow the majority, that the cows normally give birth to healthy fetuses on their own, fetuses don't drop dead with something happening. We have the following doubt. We don't know how the ox confronted this cow. Maybe the ox was coming in the front towards the cow. And once the cow saw the ox coming to it, it got scared. Because it got scared, it gave birth to a stillborn. So it had a miscarriage due to fright of the oncoming attack by an ox. So then the owner of the ox would be exempt from that miscarriage because that's just grama. That's just a cause. That's not a direct act of damage. The ikal meimar, or it's possible, me'achora asa, that the ox came from behind. Amin gachnag chavi pila. And it gored and damaged. So havi mamana mutal besafik. So this is money that we just don't know what happened. The majority can't tell us which way the ox attacked, and therefore kol mamana mutal besafik kolkin. Since we don't know, we just divide it. Okay, so we're back to, we haven't been able to disprove the law of Shmuel. Again, the discussion that we're in the midst of is, according to Rav, just like as in all other matters, we follow majority in matters of kashrus, in matters of life and death, in matters of money too, to take money out of the hands of the person holding it, we can follow majority. That's the view of Rav. And the view of Shmuel is that no, that in regards to money, majority alone is not enough to take money out of the hands of the person holding on to it. So today we saw two attempted proofs. One is from the fact that there is a brisa that says that if a man buys a slave and it turns out that the slave is a thief, so he's stuck with that slave. So we say the case is probably where he hasn't yet paid for the slave. That's the view of the Chasam Sofer. He's stuck with the slave. Why? Because most slaves are thieves. So you see that the fact that most are a certain way can take the money out of his hands. And the Gemara says, no, that's more than most slaves being thieves, that's most of most. And then we had a second attempted proof. We learned in Masechet Bava Kamma that if we find a dead fetus, we don't know how it became a dead fetus. So we just divide the potential liability. We make the owner of the ox pay half of what he would have paid if we knew it was his ox goring. So again, why don't we say there, let's follow the majority. The majority don't give birth to stillborns, so it's probably the ox that caused it, so make the ox pay the full half, not just a quarter. So the Gemara says, no, because there, even though you follow a majority in terms of the mother, cow, and the child, but, you know, at the end of the day, if we're going to say that it's the ox that caused the death, we don't know how it caused the death. Did it cause it directly because it was coming from the front? I'm sorry, coming from the back? Or did it cause it indirectly, coming from the front, scared the mother cow, and because it scared the mother cow, the mother cow dropped the child, and then the owner of the ox wouldn't have to pay. So therefore, since we're in doubt, it only pays half.
Rabbi, I thought that when there is a doubt,
it should be paying.
You know, there is no, this is too much of an assumption, you know, here. Why did they get paid? I think you have to be proven to be paid. There's nothing to be proven here. It's all, assumption. Front, back, side.
Well, that's true. There are assumptions here. Again, this is the view of Sumchus. Sumchus says that even though one person is a mugzak, one person is holding on to the money, and nevertheless, he says, Namana mutal besafik cholkin, that when there is doubt, you divide up the liability. All right, maybe leima ketanai. Maybe this question, namely the law of Shmuel, that in monetary issues we do not accept a majority to take money out of somebody's hands. Leima kitanoi. Maybe this is not just an argument between Rav and Shmuel, but this is actually an argument of the Tanaim. Because we learned the following. Shor shahaya roeh. Let's say you have an ox pasturing. V'nimtza shor harug bitzido. And you come back and you find a dead ox next to this ox that was pasturing. Aval bishazeh menugach. Now the dead ox has a big gash in its stomach from a horn. And the ox that was pasturing next to it has already been convicted three times for goring. Or zemenushach, this ox is gashed with, bite marks. Vizeh muad lishoch, and this one that was eating next to it is a known biter. It's bitten three times. So we don't say biyadua shezeh nagcho. Oh, we know for sure that this ox gored, or zenashcho, or this ox bit. We don't say that because we don't know for sure. It's just an assumption, and we don't have witnesses. So according to the Chachamim, we wouldn't make him pay. First view, the Tanakhama. Rebbe Acher says, Gamal ha'ocher bein agmalim. If you've got a camel who is busy procreating amongst the camels, so when camels procreate, they go crazy, they get all excited. V'nimtza gamal harug b'tzido. Then you find that one of the camels is dead, so probably it's this camel all excited. It was involved in the procreation that killed it. So biyadua shezeh hargo. So then he says, yes. He says, we do follow the presumption. And we say that the owner of the camel that was involved in the procreation has to pay. Okay. So we have an argument here between Tanakama and Rabbi Acha. Right? Do you follow an assumption to make someone have to pay? It's probably from the goring animal. It's probably from the excited camel. Rabbi Acha apparently follows the assumption. Yeah, since it's probably from there, the owner of the camel has to pay. Tanakama says, no, you didn't have witnesses seeing that there was goring or biting. You don't pay.
We're not worried about motzi mechaver
al haraya. That's exactly what we are worried about.
Okay.
This is what we're discussing. Is this haraya? Is rov enough of haraya to be motzi mechavero? It's enough of a riot to put somebody to death. Is it enough of a riot to be motzi mamo?
Isn't that like something we say is a svara that no one can do that? I know Sukkos argues on that, but that's the first mission of Bamitzi, right?
Correct.
And motzi mechaveru al-raya.
Exactly.
Possessions, everything.
Correct, but our question is what level of proof is what we need for riot? There was muhzak. Here we're talking about rov. Is rov enough of a riot?
Or smoking gun, basically.
Is that enough? So, Svarua, they figured in the yeshiva like this. Deruba v'chazaka ki adadi ninu. A rove, which is what we've been discussing till now, Rav and Shmuel, that's the same as these assumptions. Like a goring ox is probably the source of this dead gored ox. Or an excited donkey, an excited camel is probably the source of the dead camel. So therefore, lema Rav d'ama krabacha. Rav, who says that we do follow the majority in regards to taking out money, is like Rav Acha, who followed the chazaka to take out money from the owner of the camel. Well, Shmuel, Damer Katana Kama. And Shmuel, who says you don't follow a majority, he's following the Tana Kama. Amlocha Rav, so Rav could tell you, this is not really a case of majority. This is really a case of chazaka, of assumption. Another Amir, Rav, the Tana Kama. The Tanakhama said in the case of the ox that was found dead next to an ox that's known as a goring ox, we don't make the goring ox pay. All right, that's not necessarily against me that I would follow a majority to make a person pay. Because Ad Kanlo Kamar Tanakhama Hossam. When did the Tanakhama say his thing? It's over there. El Delo Azlina Basar Chazaka. His point was that you're not going to follow an assumption. Even though this is the goring ox, you can't assume that it probably gored the one next to it. Aval basa ruba. But when it's not an assumption, but it is a majority, as Linan, we can follow majorities. And a majority will take out money. Shmuel amalecha, Shmuel will tell you, anada amri afilu l'rabacha. What I'm telling you can work even according to Rabacha. Ad kalokam rabacha hasam elad lazlinam basar chazaka. Rabacha said over there with the camel that's involved in procreation, and that's probably the source of the dead camel, because we can follow the assumption to hu gufe muhzak, because we're talking about the nature of an animal. The nature of an animal that's involved in procreation is that it gets all worked up. So here we have a dead camel next to an animal that we know was involved in procreation. So we can assume that the animal that's all worked up is the animal that killed this one. Avobasa ruba. But to follow a majority, we don't see something. We say, well, most of the time, this is what happens. Lo aslina. A rove is not the same thing as a chazaka.
Is he saying it's like ruba deruba here?
I don't think it's so much ruba deruba. I think it's more that this is, you know, a chazaka. This is a chazaka about the nature of an animal. Right? The nature of an animal is always going to be that way. An animal gets involved in procreation, it gets all worked up. So that when it's worked up that it may have killed, it's not that most of the time there are dead animals next to it. No, we're just saying that we know the nature of an animal in procreation is worked up, so to say that we assume that the worked up animal is what killed the animal that's here, that's dead, all right, that's one thing, but that doesn't mean that we're going to assume that a majority is reasons to know something. Not a majority that's reasons to know something. It's nature. It's more than a mu'ad here. We're saying this is the nature of animals, the way God made it. God made it as something which gets excited during, its procreation.
It's in this specific animal, whereas this is all animals type of thing.
Let's talk about the first case. The first case was a guy buys an ox, buys a cow, and finds out that the cow's a gorer, right? He said, well, I wanted it to plow. It can't plow. That's not something about nature that most people buy to plow. It's not nature. It's not the nature of animals. Here we're talking about the nature of animals. That Rav Acha is willing to take away money based on a ruling of the nature of animals. Okay, the nature of animals, the way God made it. It's what happens. But that's not the same thing as saying, based on a majority of what most people do, we're going to make somebody pay money or not pay money. Tashma, here's another proof. An attempt to discuss this issue. We learned our Mishnah. Amocher peros lechavero. If Reuven sells me seeds, v'zara, and I plant the wheat, v'lot samchu, and nothing's growing, afilu zera pishtan, even if what he sold to me were flax seeds, which normally are not used for eating, eino chayev b'achriyusa, and I can't make him give me back the money. My love isn't the case. Afilu zera pishtan, even though it's flax seed, the rubel is riazavni. Most people buy the flax seeds to plant them, not to eat them. Afilu achin, even so, loaz linam basaruba. I can't get reimbursed, even though these flax seeds were not growing. They were not useful for growing. So the Gemara says, you know what? That's a good proof. That's a good proof that we don't follow majority. So Tanaihi, we have to say that really it's a machlokas tanayim. The tanya lived in a brisa. Hamocher peros lechavero. If Reuven sold me wheat, he sold me seeds. Vizarin velot samchu, and I planted them and they don't grow. Zero negina. If what he planted sold me wasn't wheat, he sold me, garden seeds like cabbage. Shein echal. Nobody eats those seeds. You only can grow out of it, things like cabbage. So, and now I plant and it's not growing. So chayav b'achriyusa, needs to give me back the money. Zera pishtan, if what he sold me was flax seed. Most people don't eat the flax seed, but a minority do. Then ain't no chayav b'achriyusa. He doesn't have to give me the money, even though this flax seed is not growing. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, no sein lo demei zera. He has to give me back the money. He has to give me back the money because most people buy seeds to plant them. And since these are not growing, so it's a mekach tos. Amrulo. Then there was the view of a group of sages who said to Rabbi Yossi, why are you following the majority? But harbe lo chimosu l'dvar machem. There are many people who buy seeds for purposes other than planting, to eat the seeds, to use them for a medicine. So maybe this guy is one of those who bought, maybe Zeb bought for another purpose. Why do you make the seller return? So now, man tanoi, where is this machlokas tanoim on the question of whether a majority is going to take money out of people's hands? Ilema tribiosi, if it's tribiosi, because he says that Most people are buying the seeds for planting. If you can't plant, then you get the money back. Then the sages who respond to him who say, well, maybe you shouldn't get the money back because maybe this person who bought it had another purpose. It's not really true. Tarvayu basaruba azli. They're both really following the majority. Mar azil basaruba di inchi. One person says we follow most people. Most people are buying for the sake of planting, and therefore he gets his money back. Umar, and the other one says, I'm sorry, most people buy for all sorts of purposes, not just for planting. Umar, and the other one, Rabbi Yossi, said you get the money back, Azal Basaruba Dizriya. He's looking at most of the seeds. Most of the seeds are purchased for planting, and that's why he said that you have to get the money back. Ela Itana Kama Rabbi Yossi. So you can say like this. It could be that the argument is between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi. The Tanakama said that the man who got the seeds that don't grow doesn't get any money back. So why? He said, because apparently we don't follow the majority. Or Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi says he gets his money back. So that's like Rav, that you do follow the majority to take out money. So that's the machlokas. Or Itanakama v'amrulo. Or maybe it's the Tanakama versus the latter opinion. In other words, the Amrulo said the reason why he's not going to get his money back is because lots of people buy seeds for other purposes. In other words, there's a majority of people who are buying not for planting. So that's following the majority. Whereas the Tanakama said the reason why he doesn't get his money back is because we don't care about what the majorities are. We say that a majority is not enough to take money out of people's hands. So that's like the view of Shmuel. So that's the machlokes.
Is that the assumption that you want to plant those seeds?
Well, many, many times. That's correct.
Or maybe you want to cook it and eat it. You know?
Oh, but a lot of them are not very edible. So things like cabbage seeds. No one eats the cabbage seed. You eat the leaves of the cabbage.
Wouldn't that put a doubt in the sale?
That's part of the issue.
You get paid half of it, not the whole amount.
It's only sumchas. Tana Rabbana. Now dealing with the issue of when a person sells and then the buyer ends up with losses, does the seller have to reimburse for those losses? Tana Rabbana, I say just what it's in a braita. Right? If a guy sells cabbage seed, and these are seeds that are not growing, all right, so we say that the seller has to reimburse. So what does he reimburse? So the Braisa says, Demei Zera, he has to pay for the seeds again, give back the money for the seeds. Velo Hotzah, but he doesn't have to pay for all the expenses on the part of the buyer that the buyer incurred. Because those expenses were grama, they were an indirect cause. And as an indirect cause, a person doesn't need to pay for it. However, yesh omrim, there are some sages who say, afotza, the seller needs to pay now for all the expenses that the buyer had in watering, in weeding, in planting. So man yesh omrim, who's this view that says that the seller has such great responsibility? Amar Rav Chizda answered, it's Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Hi, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Which Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said that? So, Ilema, Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Masnissin, Rav Shimon Gamliel of our Mishnah, the Tnan who said in the Mishnah, Hamoche Peres Lechaveiro, if a person sells seed to his friend, Vizarn Velot Samchan, and they're not growing, Afilu Zera Pishtan, even if it was flax seed that normally people don't buy for eating, he doesn't have to replace the money. And then we had on that the end of the Mishnah. But if the seeds are garden seeds that virtually no one is eating, everybody is planting, they're really not edible, and these were planted and they're not growing, the seller has to pay, give the money back. So one second. Tanakama nami achikamar. The Tanakama also would agree with it. Because the Tanakama zera pishtanu de no chayavach yusin. The Tanakama spoke about regular seeds and flax seeds. Flax seeds, very few people eat. But, hazir one gina, But garden seed, shein ne'achalim, which almost nobody eats, then chayav b'achrisim. He would agree that you have to replace the money. So what's the argument? So must be Rav Shimon Gamliel, by jumping in, is to add that not only does the seller have to replace the money, but the seller has to replace the expenses that the buyer incurred. So Mar Savar Dmei Zara, the Tana Kama holds, the seller has to give back the money for the seeds, for the garden seeds. Umar Savar Afotso, he even has to pay for the expenses. But maybe not. Dilma Yipcha, maybe the opposite. The Tana Kama holds, he has to pay for the expenses. And Rav Shimon Gamliel holds, you just pay for the seeds. Hello, Kasha. The Gemara says, that's not a question. Because Kol Tana Basu Litfuye Milsuka Asu. We always have an assumption. When another Tana adds a few words, he's to add to the law. So, when you have Rav Shimon Gamliel speaking up, that must mean that Rav Shimon Gamliel is coming to say, okay, there's even more to pay. Not just to pay for the seed, but to pay for the expenses. So the Gemara says, but maybe not. Maybe the whole mission is Rav Shimon Gamliel. There are words missing. But this is the way to read it. Hamocher peros lechaveiro, if a person sells seeds to his friend, vizaran velot samchu, and they get planted by the buyer and they don't grow. Afilu zera pishtan, even if what was sold was flax seed, that the majority of people getting the flax seed want to plant them. Eino chayabachu yusan, the seller does not need to replace the money, because he can say, I assumed you were from the minority that wanted to eat the flax seed. That's the view of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, the Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, when it's flax seed and there's a minority that eats it, you don't have to pay. The seller, that is, doesn't have to pay. But Zarone Gina, but if it would be garden seed, Shein and Echalin, that almost nobody eats the garden seeds, almost everybody plants them, so then, then you are responsible to pay for them. But he's not adding to say that you pay even for the expenses of the buyer. Elas, or rather, where do we see Rav Shimon Gamliel say that the seller will have to pay for the expenses? Rav Shimon Gamliel, it's the following Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Tanya Lamed in a Braisa. If a person brings wheat to the grinder who has the pair of millstones, litchon, to grind the wheat for him into flour. So now the normal way to do it would be to soak the wheat into water and then to soften them up with a big stick and then to grind them. The lo litzon. But the craftsman didn't do that. He didn't soak them. So instead, vasan subin. So out of this wheat came, very clunky flour, bad flour. Oh, morsan, or flour that's even worse. It's the morsan flour. Or what came out was kemach lenachton. Or you have another situation. A guy comes with flour, he gives it to a baker to make out of the flour bread. Vafo pasni polin. And again, the baker does a bad job. He doesn't produce good bread. He produces bread that's collapsing. Or behemala tabach, you brought an animal to a shaykhet to slaughter, v'nibla, and he did a bad job, he ruined it. So in all these cases, chayav, so the craftsman who ruined the wheat, or who ruined the bread, or ruined the animal, has to pay for the damage. But Pneshu can also say sachar, because he's getting paid for his work, he's a shomer sachar. A paid watchman who's getting paid for his work has a high degree of responsibility. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Rav Shimon Gamliel says even more. No Saint Lodme Boshto, the craftsman, the shochet, the baker, the grinder has to give to the customer both money for what he ruined, and he has to pay him for having humiliated him. That he is embarrassed that he doesn't have bread. Udme Boshus Orchav. And the humiliation of the guests who come, and now there's nothing for them to eat because the bread is collapsing. So now that opinion, who says that there's such added obligation, so that would be a one who would say that if I bought seeds and I planted them, I bought garden seeds, I plant them, nothing's able to grow, so then I get paid for my expenses too. Not only do I get my money back, and as we see in that Braisa, the Chena Reb Shimon Gamliel, Omer Reb Shimon Gamliel used to say, Mina gadol hayav Yerushalayim. There was a big custom in Yerushalayim. Amoser suda lechavero. If I hire a chef to cook a meal for my big party, v'kilkla, and he ruined the meal, nosin lo d'mei bashto, he has to pay for my humiliation, d'mei boshes chaverov, plus he has to pay for the humiliation of all my guests, d'mei boshes orchav. So if he's paying for my humiliation and the humiliation of my guests, that means he's paying for my expenses too. If I got from him seeds, and the seeds don't work, then he pays for my expenses as well. Old Minute God of Yerushalayim, once we're talking about Yerushalayim, here's another good custom. There was a great custom in Yerushalayim that they had following codes. Mapa Prus al Gabi HaPesach. A person would put a tablecloth over the doorway, and then everyone would know, Kolzman Shaprus, as long as there's a tablecloth over the doorway, Orchin Nechnas, and guests could come in to eat, they're welcome. The Stalka Mapa, once the tablecloth was taken away, that means there's no food being served. In Orchin Nechnas, and the guests would not come in to eat, because that means that the host is not able to serve them.